My name is Yara Yonis, a.k.a. Space Monk, and you are listening to the Dope Science Show with Science Stuff with Steph.
Hello, welcome to the Dope Science Show with Stephanie Lowe, a.k.a. Science Stuff with Steph. Thank you for your ears and minds. I hope that the show sparks new ideas, new opportunities, and conversations. I want us to learn and grow. We are all curious, innovative, and experimental in our daily lives. We are all dope scientists. Hello, hello. Thank you guys for joining the show. I appreciate you. I missed you guys. I'm trying to get these shows out faster, but it's hard. So thank you for being patient with me. My name is Stephanie Lowe, a.k.a. Science Steph with Steph. I am the host of the show and the creator of the Dope Science Show brand, the Dope Science Show podcast, and the Dope Science Show Minute so far. And it's been a fun experience, and I thank you guys for being a part of it. Today's show features a awesome human being. Her name is Crystal Devine Brewer, and she is a math student and an intended marine biology major. She is also math assistant, and she is really inspired and empowered to share ways that people can learn to succeed in math so that they can move on to their STEM careers. Most people are afraid of going into science or any STEM career because they are challenged by math. So we talk about how she's overcome her challenges in her life and her ability to understand math itself, and how she has found the magic and the power of Jedi Masters. She calls her mentors Jedi Masters because they're super nerds who reach out in college and really try to inspire and mentor their students. So we talk about that. We talk about the oppression of people and how that relates to food. We talk about whether our GMOs good or are they bad. Let's talk about it. And I end the show with a feedback, a little mini episode with listener, the podcast groupie number one, also known as Justin, who gives me his feedback on the film Get Out. He's white. He's a guy. I hadn't talked to anyone who was white or male about the film. So he said, hey, I have an opinion. And I was like, oh, okay, come on the show. So you guys, if you still want to keep talking about Get Out, we do a little 10-minute clip about that. So I hope you guys enjoy that at the end of the show. And feel inspired. Feel inspired to call me. I have a number. I'm going to start like doing these hotline commercials or something, like late night TV back in the 80s, where it's like, call me. So I'm gonna start doing those because I want you guys to call me and leave messages, and so I can put you on the show, or we can like help create a podcast episode together. So I will put that in the show notes, the number again, and I appreciate every moment of your time, and I hope you guys enjoy the show. So let's get started.
It's hard to stop rebels that time travel. But we at the Time Council pride ourselves on doing just that. Welcome to the Living Museum, where legendary rebels from throughout history have been frozen in suspended animation. Here in this particular exhibit, you'll find members of Wonderland and their notorious leader, Janelle Monáe, along with her dangerous accomplice, Badoola Oblongata. Together, they launched Project Queen, a musical weapons program in the 21st century. Researchers are still deciphering the nature of this program and hunting the various freedom movements that Wonderland disguised as songs, emotion pictures, and works of art.
Call us dirty Welcome, welcome to the Dope Science Show. Hello, Crystal. How are you?
I'm doing all right. And yourself?
Very, very good. To my audience, this is Crystal Delvine Brewer. She is a marine biology intended major who works as a mathematics student assistant. Mm-hmm. And that sounds so interesting. Like, okay, I get it. I can see who you are. I know you from your Instagram name, Science Inquiry. And you always post like little snippets of little of information that so I get a chance to learn something new, and I really appreciate it. So I've been following your account for a while, and that's why I thought, well, let me, you know, connect and see a little bit or hear a little bit more about your story. So can you tell the audience a little bit about who you are?
Of course, of course. And thank you for saying so. That's so sweet. That's kind of what I'm trying to go for with my Instagram account is slice of life. Because I follow a lot of PhD students, and I'm not there yet. And it can be a little overwhelming to see so many people so far along, and I'm not quite there yet. So that's kind of what I'm trying to do with my account anyway. So that's so sweet that you took that away already. And I haven't been doing it that long.
I know. In fact, I was surprised that you didn't have more posts. In my memory, you had been doing it for a while, but
it feels like I have.
That's funny. It's the way the algorithm is on Instagram, you know? So you don't see everyone's posts all the time. So it's just like an overall feel of their account, unless you have notifications that are telling you every time they post.
And I think part of it, too, is I followed you, I think, on my personal account, too, which I am not going to be sharing, because that's for my family to keep track of me like the gossipy people they are. And I think I followed your science stuff with Steph on my other account before. So for me, it feels like even longer.
Yeah, it feels
even longer. And then you launched the Dope Science Show, and I found that, and I launched my own science communication outreach portal, basically, is what I call it for myself.
Yay!
And so it's crazy. That and, you know, the way time works in the modern world. We live in California, so they call it a New York.
We both live here.
Yeah, they call it a New York minute. I was like, nah, it's a California minute. It's okay. Even faster.
Exactly. A California minute feels like forever.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you have the 5 and the 405 and the 10 and the 710 and the 15, all of that, it's always backed up. Everything feels longer.
Exactly. So why did you decide that you want to get into science communication? Is it related to your being a student assistant? Like, what brought you that way?
Actually, my teachers did at school, my current college in Santa Ana. Big shout out to them. I love them. Like, I call them as a undergrad person.
What is the college's name?
Just Santa Ana Community College. Go Dons.
Oh.
Super simple. And as an undergrad student, I don't have a, quote, advisor I go to or even a dedicated academic counselor. So my mentors on campus, I all call them my Jedi masters because they're all nerds. And I'm a mega nerd. And they love it. And I get more when I flatter them. And the fact that they're nerds works. So it's really easy. So they, as a unit, and unbeknownst to them as a community, as teachers, didn't know, but they very much focus in the science and mathematics department on outreach to their students, just as human beings and as teachers. There's the whole myth when you're in high school, when you get to college, the door will be locked if you're late. And it's not like that at all. And as people, they really embody that. They keep track of you. And that inspired me to go, well, since I tend to see teachers as heroes, maybe I should think about what they do. And then it just spiraled out of control when I discovered people like you and thought about how Bill Nye, of course, has impacted my life. And here I am.
That's awesome. there's so much. I feel like science communication is hot right now, and I don't know if it's just because I'm into it and you're into it and we bring up the level. I think that is the case.
Yeah. Well, you're immediately in it. You're like, yeah, this is everything. I have family members that are very much into football, and they think, oh, football is everything. It's fantastic. And I just don't get it. I'm a hockey person.
Exactly. I'm not watching the Super Bowl.
No, I'm not either. Although I'm going to be going out and eating because no one will be out.
Oh, yeah, you guys. I forgot to tell you. I recorded this back in January, and if you haven't figured it out already, the way I release the episodes are not exactly real life, as in, like, I record this yesterday and now they're released. There's a delay because I have, like, a whole calendar of content, you know. Anyways, I just want to let you know that this was from January, so you're not crazy. You didn't miss the episode. It's just recorded in January. All right, back to the show.
No one will be out?
Mm-mm. They'll all be at home eating nachos.
Oh. That's true. They're going to be eating a grip at home. So I did wanted to ask you, so with science communication, what do you think? I saw, and I really like that, you have like a gift shop or something, or some sort of artist seller's platform where you sell science-themed items?
Yeah. I actually discovered it from, she has initials in her name. She's the Science Mom on Instagram, and it's going to drive me crazy.
You can send it to me later and I can add it.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be, TD, the Science Mom. It's, Dr. Tomai. She's fantastic. And, she did her own thing and she came up in my feed and it's on Redbubble. And I thought, I've tried Threadless. Why not try? I've tried everything. I've tried Etsy and DeviantArt when that was a thing when I was young. We don't talk about the dark ages. and I tried it out. I love art as well as science. And I have a lot of problems dividing the two in my spare time as a hobby. And so I tried it. I just uploaded one thing. And they have so many things that they offer in terms of product, and I upload my design and they print it and I get, you know, X amount of percentage from the actual sale. I can set a certain amount of the price, percentage markup. And I started that because, again, like I said, I have a hard time dividing the art from the science. I think that there's too much of a division, and I get a lot of it is self-confidence. People value STEM more because it comes out in technology and money, but art is just as important. I mean, we live in California, we've got Hollywood right up the way, and Burbank, and I live right down the street from Disneyland, and art has its own place as well, and why divide them when they're both so integral to being human, right?
Right. That's why I'm all about STEAM.
Exactly. I guess I should use that more of a hashtag.
I think so, because a lot of people are not familiar with it. I try to use both.
I totally agree.
I liked what you were offering, and I was like, I could see, if you have time, that expanding into something greater. I noticed something very controversial, though, where you put, I love GMOs. And I was like, why do you love GMOs? Can you tell me that really quick?
I had a feeling that was going to go back to that. One of my, quote, Jedi Masters on campus, it's actually, I'm going to say it's his fault, but I adore him. before he became a professor at my campus, he worked in the biotech industry. He's a California guy. He went to UCR for molecular biology and was studying.
I went to UCR.
Nice! Very nice. I have a friend that goes there right now. He, I think, is also a molecular biology PhD student. He's on his third project. It's a wonderful campus. It's older, so it kind of has that grown-in feel. It reminded me a lot of my home state, Washington, because all the trees are all mature, and so they canopy over. Mm-hmm. It was lovely. And he was studying flooding effects on plants. And unfortunately, his has kind of a sad story. He got his master's as a consolation prize, but I guess the technology wasn't there for him to fully understand what was going on in this protein pathway.
Okay.
And so when he graduated, he went into the biotech sector and then left to become a teacher. I don't remember why, but that's his story to tell. And when I took his molecular biology class as part of my major prep before transfer as a community college student, he is a very big proponent of letting people speak their mind and then giving them the evidence contrarily wise. And since he is a molecular biologist, you can imagine this whole course was his jam. And he utilized the opportunity to help educate my classmates. And by the end, there weren't that many, but it's a challenging subject. I admit that, especially if you don't have a firm grasp on basic chemistry. Because basic chemistry, basic mathematics, all the basics of science, in my opinion, are some of the most challenging to understand because they tend to be fairly anti-intuitive. And he really focused on why genetic engineering was important and how not different it is from modern hybridization through breeding. So ancient corn and bananas don't look the way they do now, and that has to do with domestication. You know, the great wolf, and now we have chihuahuas or pits or great Danes. I mean, we have this whole spectrum, and it's
like
not
natural selection.
Yeah, natural selection, well, except
but it's
artificial
not natural
selection.
Because we, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it's not just, I guess that's not where I'm going with it. Where I'm going with it is genetic engineering speeds up the natural selection process. There's this, I shared it on my own personal Facebook. Maybe I should share it on my Facebook page for the Science Inquiry. There is a researcher that's been working on hornless cows. There's a certain species of, I think it's dairy cow, that everybody grows horns, male or female. They all grow horns. And in order to protect them and the herd, you don't want them fighting and you don't want them hurting themselves, they actually burn the horn nubs so that they don't grow. And nobody enjoys doing this. Nobody enjoys doing this. The cows don't like it. The dairy farmers don't like it, or cattle farmers. I say dairy loosely, maybe I shouldn't. nobody enjoys this. It's a painful process. It's just not fun. There's an Australian researcher somewhere here in California, I forget which campus she's researching at, I want to say Burbank, that has been researching these two bulls where they cut that gene out using genetic splicing. I say that loosely, that's not the actual technical term of it, from another species or another breed of cow that doesn't grow horns. You can, you know, the black and white spotted and then the red and then the solid black, all these different, all these cows are different. They were bred for different things through domestication. And so they crossed them together, so now these bulls don't grow horns, which makes them safer to be with each other, safer to be with the cows, safer to be around the farmers, and it cuts out the pain of having to burn them out. And that's just a wonderful example of animal genetic engineering for the better. And I hadn't known any of this. I grew up across the river from Portland, Oregon, and down the five from Seattle, so you can imagine how granola my blood is. And my parents are not very well educated at all. They have some education, and my father is very much into picking computers apart and putting them back together. And my mother is a business sort of person. She's very, very good with people. She's a professional photographer now, so I don't have a lot of biological, chemistry, and mathematic background in my home life. So I was admittedly very fearful of this, and this particular professor laid it all out for us. He goes, okay, the good thing about science is whether you like it or not, it's usually right, and it doesn't care what you think about that. But it's up to humans to interpret it and how we're going to use it. It's the difference between golden rice, which provides additional vital vitamins to third world areas where rice is their main source of nutrients, and they're losing the ability to, or not losing the ability, I'm sorry. They are
It's okay.
It's hard for them to access vitamin K. And as a consequence, they go blind. So researchers went in and they found, okay, you guys all eat rice. Maybe we can fix that. And they
inserted... Sorry, I'm going to put my son on mute real quick.
Oh, it's all good. They put a gene from carrot, I believe. It's been a while since I looked at that one. They put a gene from it that encourages the rice to also produce vitamin K. And as an effect, they go less blind, which is really important. Here in America, we're very lucky where we can turn down food and throw things away in our trash when we're done. We have compactors and the like, and most people don't have that privilege. And so in that particular case, they assessed the human impact of putting two things together and saying, okay, what could go wrong and what could go right? The benefit, obviously, is these particular people no longer are going blind as a result from vitamin deficiency. And I don't know it well enough to say what the detrimental effect was, but as with any good science, it has been vetted very, very deeply before it was released. Boy, that was one heck of a sideswipe there. Sorry about that.
Hey, no, not sorry. Not sorry, because you just taught me something and gave the audience an example that they can understand better about GMOs. Because, you know, most people who are against GMOs don't really know how they work. You know, they don't really understand it. They think it's just, like, weird, crazy science that we're getting mutant food.
And fear of the unknown is totally sensible. I mean, that's what kept our species alive. Unfortunately, we live in a time where the answers are right there. You just choose not to see them.
Opposition as far as why they're anti-GMO, because they're also, you know, there's a sense that science can be anti-nature, and the thing, and it's not always inclusive, like natural, you know, things, everything around us is already like so perfectly engineered, and there's always a solution. Usually, if you understand, if we actually understood that particular molecular structure or whatever, it's like everything we have exists naturally. But the thing is, we don't live in natural circumstances all the time. You know, the reason why they have vitamin deficiency in that area is probably due because their natural ways of growing food and hunting was disrupted during colonialism, and now they have like fucked up ways of like feeding themselves, and they can only eat this one food, and now we've got to make a new solution for this like societal problem. And I mean, that doesn't mean science is bad, but it also I think it's a cultural resistance to feeling oppressed.
You're absolutely right. I being in California, we have a fantastic public broadcast network, and they just did a American Experience on Rachel Carson, and I honestly had no idea who this woman was. I had no clue. She was a teenager right before the Depression, and went to school for biology. And she is, of course, a white woman, because at that time in history, she was probably the only kind of woman that could go to school in any capacity, from a very poor family that the Depression hit really hard. Her father died. Her mother was very sick, I guess. I don't really remember a lot of the details of her early life. When she finally came out of school, she couldn't pursue further education because her home life demanded her being there to take care of her younger siblings, but she is known for being a biologist and a writer. She worked for Fish and Wildlife for a while, and this particular era of history was fraught with war, which we know. World War I, the Depression, World War II. My great-grandmother loves to start her conversations with, "I survived the Depression." Like, yes, I know, Grandma, but it's 2017 now. Fantastic stories to tell, but... And I had an epiphany while I was watching this particular American experience of, like I said, Rachel Carson. She was an accidental wonder in writing, in that she was very talented and did no diving before she started writing about the ocean and its depths. She worked for Fish and Wildlife, and all these papers would come across her desk, and she would just make the connections in her head, and she wrote a fantastic book about it called Under the Sea Wind. Pardon me. She wrote another book years later, right at the, I want to say after World War II. No, it must have been about a decade after World War II ended. And then returned to writing once more around the time of, I think she finished her last book that I heard of in this particular program, around Vietnam. And I had a feeling I knew where this was going, because I did my own research on that kind of, on that era, because my grandfather was in Vietnam. And I did, he was a Marine, so you can imagine the kind of personality he loves. I love him so much, but I look at him and I go, "Grandpa, you're such a jarhead." He goes, "I know." And for him, the world of DDT and Agent Orange hit him very hard. His first and only baby died before she was able to leave the hospital. And doctors later told him it's because he was doused in these, basically chemical warfare, chemicals, not to be redundant. But the era before Vietnam, yeah, it's terrible.
It's so horrible.
Yeah, and the era before Vietnam is actually what designed DDT. There was, I can't remember his name, but there was one particular chemical engineer that made it. And at the time, they didn't know the consequences. They they were too worried about the H-bomb. And when they were researching the H-bomb, they asked, how long can a human withstand the radiation that comes off of it? They weren't worried about what was going to happen in the next year, 5 year, 10 year, right. 15 year. They were more worried about war on the horizon. And for them, that is the world that they live in. So I try to have a little bit of compassion when I look backwards, but I look at them and go, why did you not check? Right. It's just that it didn't cross their mind. And in that time period between, we know of the bombing of Nagasaki and Hiroshima, our H-bombs got, before the Cold War, they got bigger and bigger and bigger. We're talking, by the time the Cold War hit, they were 10 times bigger than what they were. And they were devastating when we dropped them on Japan. They were absolutely devastating, and then they got worse. And they were seen in views of security. And looking back, we now know, because we have the, what is it, the nuclear armament? We're not allowed to use nukes. We're not allowed to...
Disarmament.
Yeah, disarmament. Thank you. Goodness. Such a simple
thing. Don't worry.
We're able to look back and go, no, this is bad. You're not allowed to do that. Of course, hindsight is always 20/20.
I think we forgot, because I keep hearing about war coming.
Yes. It feels like it, right? But in that time period, we created a ton of chemicals. At one point, the documentary was telling me 1,500 over or on the store shelf pesticides for roaches and termites and slugs. Slugs is a huge one where I'm from. Slugs are everywhere. It's basically our state animal. And all of these chemicals could address those needs. They were spraying them off of cars in the middle of the street. We're talking at Ford Model A's. They're spraying them off the back of them, just walking through town. And of course, we're gagging on the couch. How could they spray these things in the air? But they didn't know. And the point of all that is they were government sanctioned. Everyone said, oh, it's safe, it's safe, it's safe, it's safe, it's safe, it's safe. And now we know that they weren't. And so I feel like, back to the GMO thing, a lot of our fear of authority comes from, one, the fact that I will definitely go out and watch Rogue One before I will watch anything else, and the post-apocalyptic stories we tell ourselves, because that's the kind of world that we anticipate. But also because we've been proven that our authority figures can't always be trusted.
Exactly.
And being that, in my personal opinion, our country as Americans is not overly scientifically literate, because science is hard. It is. It's very hard. It's a very challenging subject. It asks you to put yourself aside and see facts as facts, and we are not factual creatures. We're humans.
Do you think
social
science
creatures.
Is that hard? I don't think science is hard.
I think it is either, but people do.
I think they have a narrative around it where they think it is hard, and really it's just
that is a much better way
fear
of that, yes. A
you know.
Narrative around it. Yes, I absolutely agree. That is a much better way of putting that. I'm going to be stealing that word.
And that's why with science communication, we are the voices that are, you know, creating a platform for people to be able to engage with science and learn more about it and not be afraid of it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree. And I think, considering all the history that science has had, in my experience, I remember the bad things about people better than I remember the good.
Me too.
I try really hard to flip
yeah.
it. It's really easy to remember when I was wrong. And I think that
that's
pretty normal for people, although I am just one person. I would have to ask a lot of other people if that is normal for them. And so it's easy to remember when we were hurt versus when it benefited us, because the benefits are now integrated. They're normal. They're the new normal. So, I mean, if you take it to civil rights as well, if I was born in the 1940s, you and I would not be having this chat. Internet notwithstanding, you and I would not be talking right now. And I think that that is a wonderful thing. And now it's just normal.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like science has always been here. We call it, we have our Western view of science, but science is just part of being innovative and being a human, and I don't think it's culturally specific, though I do think the way we see it now is from the perspective of Western society.
I agree.
And with comes with its oppressive, you know, past, and it comes with its current oppressive application. And it can be used for good, and I think the more people engage with it, the greater control you'll have over the narrative and the real-life implications. You know, you won't be able to say you didn't know. You couldn't occur to you that someone would die 10 years later from the poison you put in his face today. Because, you know, maybe you'd have someone who thought a little, who had a long view versus just a short view. Like, it's just a simple numbers thing. We can't all...
Yeah.
have never thought of it, because there would have been more of us to raise questions, you know?
Absolutely.
If we were more literate and we treated science the way we treat, well, I would say the news, but no. the way we treat, like, Game of Thrones or something, where everyone knows every detail. What kind of society would this be? You know, it'd just be so much better.
And I absolutely agree. And I find that in that particular example, I mean, if you consider Game of Thrones as a form of entertainment, which it is, you're talking about not just George R.R. Martin, who wrote it, who is a master of his craft in writing, and therefore it is his responsibility to be good at it, not like strictly speaking, but hypothetically, let's roll with this. It's his responsibility to be a good writer, because that is what he's dedicated himself to, not just as a professional. You can have a day job and still be very, very good at what you do in your off time. There's nothing wrong with that. This is America. We're all about capitalism, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's their job as on the TV aspect to be the best that they can be, I think that is where science communication comes in on our end. We are the masters of our subjects. We understand it the best, and therefore it is our responsibility, not strictly speaking, because you can't put the weight of the world on one individual, but as a group of people. I know that scientists are not known for being terribly personal. They're very right. good at, we're very good sometimes at shutting ourselves up into a hole and just crunching the numbers. And that's good. That means that we have things like the internet and the like, and lasers, and unfortunately, again, the H-bomb or new innovative ways to feed the entire world. They're good things and there are bad things, of course. But it's our responsibilities as the masters of what we do to share that with others. And I think exactly. there should be a certain amount of forgiveness in people who are trying. Kevin right. Folta being, at this point, my science communication hero in the modern world. He has a podcast, Talking Biotech. And he's been under a mm-hmm. lot of fire from people who are very afraid of what he does. And that is genetic research on plants, specifically strawberries in Florida. Mm-hmm. But he has already took it upon himself and said, no, you can do whatever you're going to do to me. He works at a public university, so his emails are, there's a certain paperwork you can file and you can receive them. He has to publish them, and he's made no qualms about that. He's perfectly fine with it. Mm-hmm. But he's taken it a step further and said, this is my personal responsibility. I stand by what is right. In his particular view as a person, as well as the science, he stands by his facts that he knows to be true. And he says, this is the truth of it. I'm going to stand with it. And there's nothing you can do that's going to make me bend from it. But he does it with humility and grace. And I think that's what a lot of people fear. And maybe fear is not the right word.
I don't know. I feel like it's a controlling thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly where I was going. Yes.
You know, I feel like it's a form of censorship.
Yes.
But, you know, and there's so many different ways people can do that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because what if he was wrong? If he was wrong and he's pushing this and pushing this and pushing this, then where are we? And I think that's where the topic of scientific ethics is where the public is, in my personal opinion, the most ignorant, and it's not their fault. Scientific ethics is really dry. it can be very dry and boring. But it's important.
I think it's important, and I think it's always, like, who's the presenter? I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not mm-hmm. a scientist.
Exactly.
You know, like, I am still working through this old habit of saying I'm not a scientist, but I really believe, and I'm pushing
daily affirmations.
Yeah, my affirmation is that I'm a dope scientist, and we're mm-hmm. all dope scientists. And with that, I can recognize my lack of expertise in, you know, exactly. a particular field of study and things mm-hmm. like that. But at the same time, I can be a voice who's sharing news. You know, I don't mm-hmm. have to be like an expert in you know, Middle Eastern politics to
right.
share, you know, news that I've heard about it. Now, my opinions are my opinions, and mm-hmm. they should be treated such, but I feel like mm-hmm. people should feel like, yes, I read this today. Let me tell you about this science article I read today. Like, I want people to do that. I just want people to be excited and care, you know? And that
absolutely.
Will just open up the world and bring more minds into it. And that's just what we need.
Check, come at the neck, disrespect.
Absolutely.
I want to kind of lead into that with, you know, you work with students and you assist them with their mathematics, and you teach an adult algebra class, or you assist an adult algebra class.
Yes.
And one of the reasons that I saw that you did that, or you may have mentioned it, is that you feel that challenges in math is a major roadblock from people entering the world of STEM.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And can you share a little bit about why you do that? And
It actually started because I was a student in these classes. We have two. One is for liberal arts, business, and biology majors, which I didn't take. I took the calc pathway. So I teach in the course that is headed towards statistics. So they focus on a lot of word problems. But I passed and attended the course meant for calculus. So that focused on a lot of formulas and memorization and being able to apply what you know in a more holistic way, because the problems that you're going to be given are mostly numbers. They're not worldly. And I think that that really helps me as an assistant, because I understand that numbers are numbers. Math is a language and it speaks its own grammar. But the students that I assist are not looking to master that language. They're looking to apply it to their everyday life. And that is as important as Einstein's work or theoretical mathematics, because you can't just have math, in my opinion. You have to be able to use it somehow, although it's helpful to have pure mathematics, but I digress. Excuse me. I totally lost my train of thought. I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah, no worries. And with applied mathematics, do you feel like teaching that, is that a gateway for some students who feel like, oh, actually, I can get this? And then do you feel like you're, you know, actively opening the door for them in that regard? But I saw you mention about the language and things like that, but also there's a mental block associated with math. And
I absolutely try my hardest. I can't say that I do, but I try my hardest to be the math friend. As an assistant, it is not my job to give my students the answers. It's my job to help them walk themselves to the answer. And if you think of it like a pair of glasses, I do wear glasses as a person, and my lenses are totally clear. But my students only have a pinpoint to look through. So when they're walking around in this darkness, basically, they miss things sometimes. And it's my job to help them clear their glasses and see more. It's not my job to do it for them. And that's what, since I'm not the teacher, I can focus on the more personal aspect. The teacher's job is to make sure that they have the information, and I take it upon myself to make sure that they understand what's going on. And it gives me a little bit more flexibility having 30 people in a class, usually 15 by the end, and having two teachers. We can give a little bit more of the one-on-one that people, I feel, in this country at least, really need with math, because they're burnt very early on. I learned area of a square for 12 years. I mean, I didn't get too complicated in my own mathematics, and as a student myself, I can understand where they feel most apprehensive about moving forward, and I feel it's my responsibility to help them understand that, no, you're here to learn, that's your job, and it's okay that you don't know things, because your job is to learn, not to know things. And so I really try to go into it with that mentality. Sometimes I get a little sidetracked and go, why don't you understand this, or why am I not good enough? Why can't I teach you this? But I try to remember at the end of the day that we're all human. We have bad days and we have good days, and we have strengths and weaknesses.
It's true. You know what makes a difference? I'm dyslexic. And so for me, all these remembering formulas is like the ultimate challenge. Because I will remember them, but is it the right one? And did I flip that or what? But I can get the concept, you know? And so I've struggled in math my whole life, and I just didn't feel passionate about it. It was just like my attitude. And when I went to back to school the second time studying nuclear plant operations, I had to take, you know, higher level math. And my attitude was different. It was a different stage in my life. And I just decided, no, this is fun. And I told myself, this is fun. It's like a puzzle. And it was just a total change of my attitude.
Yes.
You know, and it was, I knew I was telling myself that. I knew that it was just me saying it's fun. But I started making it a game, you know, like, And I also found I can learn differently. I started going on YouTube to look up tutorials that actually appealed to me, you know, and cheat sheets. And I realized, you know, I didn't have to learn it only one specific way. It might not be, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That is so funny because that is actually how I personally visualize and encourage my students to visualize math. It's a puzzle. It's just, they're not jigsaw pieces. They happen to be, you know, letters and numbers, and you have to be confident to move them around. And every time you learn something new, you get another puzzle piece and you click it in place and all your puzzles look different. So that is so funny. I'm actually looking at the words puzzle pieces in my notebook that I wrote down. And I think age and personal experience has a lot to do with it. I am turning 25 in March. I've been an associate level student for a very long time because I spend a lot of time helping my family. I am. Yeah, a lot of time. And I have my own mental health barriers that I came up against when I graduated high school. And so I'm a bit delayed, but I also have other responsibilities. I'm not living with mom and dad. I haven't since I was 18. I went and lived with my mom for a little bit because I was helping her out, but I was an adult. And I think that a lot of it is taking responsibility for yourself and saying, you know, it's not the teacher's job to entertain me. It's my job. It's the teacher's job to do their best to help you. And if they don't do that, that's on them. But
I needed to get it done. And I was older. I think I was, I don't know how old I was, maybe 29 or something. I was older.
Okay,
And you know, a total different attitude.
Yeah, I have never had a problem with an older student. Once, I've had a problem with one or two over the age of 50, but once they got in the groove and I told them, no, you're good. You have so much experience. How do you learn best? You need to focus on how you learn best. Don't worry about the teenagers giggling in the back of the class. They're not your responsibility. They're not your kids. Pretend they don't exist. You got this. You can do it. And they do. I've never had a problem with an older student saying, well, I can't do this, and then throwing the notebook on the floor in college. I've had a couple of mental breakdowns that do that, but that's different.
That is different. That could be anything.
yes, exactly. I've had more than my fair share of those. They're not fun.
And you know what? And that is inspiring because what people get caught up in is we want to be in the now. They also, you need to be selective about your now. Like, your now may be a challenge, but you got to also take in the fact that, hey, in the future, this might not be so challenging.
And or the challenges you've already overcome.
And it's
that you
temporary.
Thought would never end.
Exactly. These challenges are temporary and people like the roadblock. But when you're older, you've gone through things. You have life experience and you kind of know that, okay, it gives you a different attitude. And that's inspiring because a lot of people, including myself, we start our lives over and over. You know, I was at one place at 25, another place now at 34, and I'll be in another place at 45. And instead of feeling discouraged because I'm not where I thought I would be, or someone's farther than me at this particular thing in life, like, don't look at life that way. Like, just be inspired that, hey, I can decide, hey, I'm going to go study nuclear technology after failing math 5 times.
Yeah, exactly. I failed my algebra class one semester, spring, and then I went back and did it again. Same exact class, same formula, same homework assignments, barely passed it with a C, and now I teach mathematics. I barely passed my last math class. I was in trigonometry, which is the class that I decided, you know what? It's time for a mental shift. Math can't be my enemy because, one, it's not a person, so I can't make it. It's not a thing. It's just, I can't do anything with it. Why is it my enemy? It can't hurt me. It's just numbers. That's all it is. It's just numbers and concepts. So why am I making it my enemy? And I had to totally reframe it. It took me till like spring break to go, you know what? Screw this. I'm going to be awesome. And that's it. That's all I'm going to do. I'm just going to be good at this. This is what I'm going to do. And if good is a C, then screw it. That's what good is for me. And I'm cool with that for now.
Exactly. And we'll all have challenges. I'm still dyslexic. No, you just have to figure out what tricks and, techniques work for you. And
absolutely.
Have an open mind. And that's what's super cool about what you do, because when you're working with these students, you're directly affecting them in that way. And I wanted to ask you a couple more things, because we're getting to the end of our awesome conversation. I saw that you're doing a book challenge. Well, you're doing a book challenge.
Yeah.
You're reading? What is it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My best friend hates that I don't read. And I used to read 5 books at a time when I was younger. But I got, if you're a student and you go to a government campus, go find your health center. The chances are high that they have a psych center. Go visit them. Because it has taken me 2 semesters to get back to being a productive human being, because I was incredibly stressed out. Full-time student, part-time worker with 2 jobs. That's 2 part-time jobs, so over full-time work. I was a volunteer caretaker for my great-grandmother, so I had that on my back burner. It was just crazy. And so I decided, you know what? I love reading. So I'm trying to read a book a week. So I'm on 3 of 52. And I'm reading 5 books at a time, so I have no idea how I'm going to make it to the end of book 4.
So
taking me forever.
So great.
I'm trying.
You're doing so great. I need to read more. I used to love reading too, but I just, with school, I just only started reading school books, and then I fell out of reading. And now I'm slowly getting back into it, but in a whole different way. I've been reading graphic novels recently.
Oh, I love them so much.
I'm new to them.
Indie artists. I love all of that. I can't even name any of them off the top of my head because I love them all so much.
I'm currently reading, we're going through the Moon Girl series because my daughter doesn't like reading. Well, she does, but she's lazy about picking out books that she likes.
And my sister's
I have to recommend them, and then she'll read them and be like, oh, that was really good. But she won't go out of her way to go find something. So she likes the Moon Girl series. I really like it. There's a lot of science in it.
Nice. I've never heard of that. I'm going to have to try it.
Oh, it's great. You'll love it. You'll love it. It's so good. And what did I get? I just got the graphic novel for the science fiction story Kindred. That one is amazing.
Oh, I've heard that
Octavia
name.
Butler. Octavia Butler was a science fiction writer from Pasadena, California. And she wrote several super cool science fiction stories that question politics, the direction of technology, race, sexism.
Mm-hmm.
And she does it with time travel. She does it with vampires. She's just all over. She's really innovative for
That is right up my alley. That's right up my alley.
Yeah. So I bought Kindred, which is a graphic novel of her story, their adaptation. And I'm going to do a giveaway soon for it. I've been procrastinating. But that one
exciting.
You should really check out.
You'll
watch. It is an adult. It's an adult, But my daughter, she read it and she loved it. And after that, she couldn't read any of the kid ones that she was reading before. She was like, I need something more complex like Kindred now. So
yeah,
I'm like, uh-oh, I set the bar too high.
I know, Fahrenheit 451 is still one of my favorite books, and I'm trying to avoid 1984 for obvious reasons now. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Those books are so good. I read them in high school.
Good.
But I can't read them now because I don't want to be extra sad, because
absolutely. They're on the back burner right now.
Yeah, I'm struggling. One more. Did you hear about the science march that's happening on Earth Day in Washington?
Yes. Yes, I did. I heard about one happening in L.A. as well. L.A. and San Diego, I think, is what they're trying to do.
Yeah, I think it's going to be just like the Women's March, where it's in multiple locations.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to do that.
I know, I wasn't able to go out, so I sponsored some people instead. I was like, you go be awesome in my stead. I can't go out right now. I'm very, very busy at the moment, but you here.
Exactly.
I will support you.
I procrastinated on the Women's March. I should have been there. The day of the Women's March, I woke up like, oh, shoot, I should be there.
Right.
I had made other plans, like didn't plan for it at all. I was like, how did this sneak up on me? But this one, I'm going to be there.
Nice. In Washington?
I mean, it's going the main ones in Washington, but I'm sure there'll be different locations just like Women's March was like everywhere.
That'll be fantastic. And you need to keep your Instagram story on the up and up so that I can live vicariously through you.
Yeah, I definitely will because we can't have this anti-science thing going on.
That
cannot be the way we go. Because the thing is, just because you stomp down science in your state or your country, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean the world stops. That doesn't mean...
And
it's just like a very short, closed-minded thing, you know?
And it says something about, I mean, if you want to be absolutely petty about it, like some people do, it comes off as, what about our economic future? The best thing you can do is invest in technology and move it forward. A rich country is a happy country. And I don't mean rich as in money. I mean rich as in culture.
Yes.
And the community. Your communities need to be strong. Because if you have, I mean, the chain is only as strong as its weakest link. And if we become the weak link in the chain, then we're going to topple from our quote-unquote superior position. And the best way to do that is to invest in innovation, which is why I'm so excited. I was born in the time I'm in because we have voices like yours. And I was listening to your podcast, your last one that you did, about Hidden Figures. And I'm so excited to have the time to go see that finally when my sister comes and visits me next week. I'm so excited for it. Like, we
it's
need
so
those
good.
Voices. And if
so
we don't
good.
Have that, it's more of the same. I mean, the more eyes and ears we have, the stronger we can be.
Definitely. And that was definitely my takeaway from Hidden Figures. Like, overall, that was my takeaway.
Mm-hmm.
If they weren't there, it wouldn't have happened.
It's
just that simple. It might have taken another 5-10 years, but it wouldn't have happened when it happened.
Absolutely.
We're all important. I do want to, I always end the show with thank you so much for your time. And
thank you so much for having me. This has been so fun.
It is fun. I'm always a little nervous in the beginning, then I just warm up. I'm like, okay, it's cool.
I was pacing. I was pacing for 30 minutes from 11:30 to 12:05.
That's a good thing about it being a podcast. You guys can't see me.
Right, exactly.
But I always have my guests pick the soundtrack for the episode. So you have to tell me 3 songs that you would like to be your soundtrack. Yep.
Oh,
right
my
now,
goodness.
Under high pressure.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that. Yeah,
if you don't know the name of the song, you can do the chorus and the artist, and I'll Google it later and add it.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. I honestly have no idea. I am kind of a classical music kind of person, and whatever happens to come up on my Pandora when I hit shuffle all.
I do that too. So what song can you think of at this moment? What's going to come naturally at this time?
I mean, if we're just going to go like full on, we're both women, right? Well, why don't we do Boss Ass Bitch? Why not? Or even Beyonce, Run
called?
The World. Boss Ass Bitch by PTAF, I think.
Beyonce, Rock the World.
Run the World. Why
Run
not?
The World.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Since we're having fun.
Yes. Two more.
And then Janelle Monáe. Let's do Queen. Why not? We're all about the ladies here.
Which one are we doing? Janelle Monáe?
Queen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that one.
Mm-hmm. No, that one's good. I love her rap finale. It makes me shiver every time.
Okay. Awesome. Rap finale. And one more.
Oh, is that not 3?
Nope, that was two. Well, I only heard two.
Oh, okay.
So you might have said three. I missed it. I got Beyonce, Run the World, Janelle Monáe, Queen, and that's what I heard.
Oh my goodness. You have me frantically looking through my YouTube.
Yeah, that's okay.
Let's do Caravan Palace, Black Betty. Why not?
What's it called?
Caravan Palace, the artist, that is. And then the song is okay. Black Betty. We redid the Black Betty song.
All right. I love it because I always get new music this way.
Oh, Caravan Palace. You'll love them. They're electric swing. It's so fun.
Okay. Yay, I'm excited. And the last thing is, you'll be doing the intro for my next show whenever I publish this. So what you'll do is you'll say your name and that you're on the Dope Science Show, and you can ad-lib anything you want. It's just your name and you're on the Dope Science Show. And maybe I'm having fun or I'm into science or whatever you want to say.
Okay. So whenever?
Ready. Yeah, whenever.
My name is Crystal Brewer, and you are on the Dope Science Show. Sit down, buckle up, you're about to learn.
Whoa, you were on point. Great, that's so awesome. I appreciate you. Where can, do you want people to follow you on the Science Inquiry?
That would be great, yeah. I'm pretty much the Science Inquiry everywhere. Instagram, Facebook. My email at gmail.com, and my Redbubble is just Science Inquiry, which is linked currently in my Instagram.
Awesome. And they'll all be in the show notes too.
Awesome.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Crystal.
Thank you too.
And this was a great time.
We'll have to get together sometime. You'll have to show me some good food in LA.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm always like, I need friends.
Tell me about it.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Check out Crystal's blog. I'll have the address in the show notes. Find out more about how you can find your own Jedi master. They can help you get through college or reach some major goals in your life. And I wanted to remind you guys that I'm going to end the show with some listener feedback about the film Get Out. So check it out, and I'll talk to you guys soon. Peace.
Hi, Justin. I appreciate your time. I'm so glad that we connected on Twitter so that we can get a white guy's perspective on Get Out. And it's funny, and I'm glad you said, hey, I have an opinion. Because, yeah. To be honest, I didn't even ask the white person, like, what they thought. I was just like, I wonder what white people thought about this. And so you're the first white guy who's like, hey, I have an opinion. And I know it sounds so, like, prejudiced for me to say that, but I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, hey, you're white, I'm black, or you're French, and you're this, and not have any derogatory, like, perception with it. I'm just wanted
right.
Your different opinion. You know?
Okay. Well, yeah. Sorry. I'm not meaning to cut you off there.
Yeah, no worries. I appreciate you. How about you introduce yourself to the audience so they can follow you on Twitter, because you've got awesome feedback and comments all the time. You're one of my favorite people to follow.
Well, thank you. My name is Justin Ruff, JUSTINRUFF, like Foxtrot at the end. I'm also known as Podcast Groupie Number One, which I definitely gave my name myself that name. So that's me at my most vain. I love podcasts of all types and all subjects, and Dope Science Show towards the top one.
Yay! I'm so honored. So honored. I want to know, because I know we don't have that much time, what was your favorite part of Get Out, or what do you want to talk about in particular? What did you want to share?
Well, there were some great racial overtones that I will get, but I will get to. But I think that first and foremost, it was an incredible horror film. One of the things that Hollywood is not giving us right now is originality, and this film completely blew originality out of the water. There are a lot of the great horror films throughout history have preyed on our fears. For instance, Night of the Living Dead, one of the most famous horror films. It was mostly terrifying because the brother says, "Oh, here's that guy, he's coming to get you." And this is one of the few times where the big brother was teasing you about actually comes after you and tries to get you. Or something like Last House on the Left. Those are all possible stories. Those are something that could happen. Those were very real fears that they played on. And I think Get Out played on a lot of really crazy fears that kind of exist between the two races. The white versus black. And it was a brilliant movie, great atmosphere, great score, and also had some really funny moments in it as well. The cousin was great. And sorry, spoiler alert, but one of the things is that the crazy cousin was actually right in the circumstance. And great acting, and it's really... Bradley Whitford was great, especially considering the fact that in real life he's such a hippie liberal. So he was able to, I think he really is the guy who would have, he really would have voted for Obama for a third term. But here he was able to channel so much of the that hippie liberal, but still had this weird, scary underbelly. So, yeah. Very brilliant film overall.
Definitely, I agree. Obviously, because it was a really, I felt the same way. Where it was very unique. I felt the uniqueness. I was like, this is new, and you know that feeling when something's new. You're like, you get like excited. You're like, this is new, and so it was like I was constantly being pulled along with the story where I didn't know where we were going, but at the same time. I recognize these things. I'm like, all these microaggressions, you know, like the little comments, the little side looks, and not always even the microaggressions, also the inside things that were like things that black people say to black people. I was like, I can't believe they're saying that. I felt those moments, and I was looking around like, oh, white people, what do they think? Like, I'm like, to me, it felt like it was almost like you guys got a view from, you literally were seeing it from his perspective, and I could feel that. And I was thinking, how would it feel to be white, and you're seeing those things, and you recognize the microaggressions. You may have seen them or done them yourself, unintentionally, not even realizing that they were, offensive or oppressive. And all these thoughts were coming through my mind, like, what does it feel like to be the... the white person watching this film about black people being afraid of being in a white environment, it was just a very interesting experience because my experience would be different from yours,
There were a lot of things that I've heard already. I'm in my mid-30s, so I'm not one of those evil baby boomers who voted for Trump or anything. So I listen to when somebody says something about racially. I'm there, I'm listening, and I'm trying to hear what they say. And so I kind of got some of what they were saying, about the athleticism, or look at the shoulders on this one, or look at this body, or I understood that, and there's a lot of slavery undertones that I do not understand, that I know go a lot deeper than what I understand, and the centuries of racial oppression that has existed there. And there are a lot of subtleties that Jordan Peele ended up bringing to the surface. So, these people are crazy, but at first it seems like they're not. You know, they're just weird and awkward, and you know, I would have voted for Obama for a third term.
My parents aren't racist. Don't worry about it.
I do have to dispel a few myths. The Fruit Loops and milk. She was eating the Fruit Loops and then drinking the milk separately. I don't know what that is. That's not a white person thing. But I'm going to be doing that. I do have to dispel that myth.
Well, that's not a real thing.
Yeah, or if it is, it does not go on in my house.
Yeah, and neither do you take over the bodies of people. You're not body snatchers either. That was, you know, I'll give you guys everyone credit for that. That's what also I think made it such a good film, because it ended up being a story about the other, and it ended up being something we can all relate to in the end, which is brilliant how he like tied it together. You know, like it was just like it was very, very interesting. And I highly recommend it. Everyone who hasn't seen it, I know you guys are probably tired of talking about it, or not, because you should have seen it like at least 3 times by now.
and if you're white and on the border, go see it. Go support.
You'll love it.
Go support Jordan Peele. You know, we loved him when he was on Key and Peele, and you know, very, very talented filmmaker, and is not afraid to go after some of the rough issues. So let's get some fresh faces on the movie screen that we have.
Yeah, I felt like we were all better for it. Like everyone was better for the experience. We all learned something. We all had an emotional reaction to it, and it was good. You know, that's why Jordan Peele's going to be directing Akira. So I say that to say I've never made it through Akira, the original, because I saw, but I tried multiple times. I just fall asleep in long movies. So
I'm not an anime guy.
So you don't know either. You'll see.
No,
it's like one of those legendary, iconic, like beautiful films that if you know anything about anime, you should have seen. That's why.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with that.
Definitely. Well, Justin, I appreciate you on giving your time to give me your feedback on Get Out. And, you know, I want to do this more often. I have a number that people can just call in and record whatever they want to say, and I'll put it on the show. I've mentioned it, but obviously I need to, like, mention it more. So feel free. I'll give you that number, and you can call and be on the show anytime.
All right. And I love what you are doing for it in the podcast community. You are bringing such a positive influence, and our girls need more girls. Our girls need more women like you.
Thank you. I'm trying. Definitely. I appreciate you, and I hope you have a good night, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. I really, really appreciate your time as well, and all the work that you do.
All right. Bye.